This is the Todd Wright Toddcast. Thank you very much for listening. The Todd Wright Toddcast is presented by Brandon Legal Group. They continue to be longtime supporters of Todd Wright Tour golf tournaments, as well as helping out on the podcast side. It's a simple message that Brandon Legal Group asks me to convey to you via the podcast. When you are in need of any type of legal assistance, just know they are a full-service law firm. You may have needs for divorce. You may have needs for family law. You may have needs in another area. Full service covers everything. And they service the greater Tampa Bay area. You are not required to live, work, or have your legal issue originate within the city limits of Brandon, Florida. Free consultation can be had very simply. Go to their website, brandonlegalgroup.com, click on the box that says request a free consultation, or call them to schedule it at 844-4BLG-4ME, 844-4BLG-4ME, Brandon Legal Group, your full service law firm. For those of you who connect to the Todd Wright Toddcast via joebucksfan.com, you have seen the Hat Tricks logo on the podcast since the 1st of July. Hat Tricks has been working with me really starting right around the beginning of the pandemic on Todd Wright Tour golf tournaments. They had their first foursome ever in the most recent Todd Wright Tour XXXI out in Lakeland at the club at Eagle Brook. David has been providing me Hat Tricks gift cards to offer as prizes to players for a couple of years now. And David and I are talking about some more things coming up. Clearly, Hat Tricks is a destination for many hockey fans in the Tampa Bay area. And their menu is, it's one of those things I have to ask sort of David how he wants me to talk about it, what he calls it. Hat Tricks clearly is a bar. To call their menu bar food is just not fair. It's just not fair. We all know what bar food is. This is 3 to 5 levels up from that. And I don't want to give off the impression that you're going to a 5-star steakhouse or anything like that, because that's not the impression they would want me to give. But the food is so well done, and it has been for some time. Things are just finally starting to calm down at Hat Tricks after the Tampa Bay Lightning's second Stanley Cup run, and I'm happy to offer them a little bit of exposure here on the Todd Wright Toddcast, and we'll see if we can keep it going in the coming months through the football season and into the start of the next hockey season. Thanks to David and the crew at Hat Tricks for their support of Todd Wright Tour golf tournaments. All right, email is wright.todd@yahoo.com. Social media, Todd Wright 2121 on Twitter, Todd Wright 2121 on Instagram. And if you'd like to be my friend on Facebook, you can do that. I'm simply Todd Wright in Tampa, Florida. I waited to get the protected lists for all NHL teams, most notably the Tampa Bay Lightning, before doing this particular edition of the Toddcast, because I didn't want to speculate without the knowledge of the list, knowing the list would be made public, and then we had some time before the draft actually started filling the roster of the Seattle expansion franchise. That will be coming up on Wednesday. So I'll talk about where my mind was before the list was made public, and then we'll run it down in this podcast and give a few thoughts on it. All of us were looking for the surprise, right? The big name that would be left unprotected by the Lightning because of their depth in the organization overall. In the end, there are some bigger names that are unprotected. The one I thought might be unprotected was Sergachev. And the one I knew wouldn't be unprotected was McDougal, which had gotten a lot of attention. McDonough. Sergachev, to me, had more bad moments in these Stanley Cup playoffs, particularly after round one, than any player on the Lightning. And that just doesn't jive with the play in your own zone and protecting your own net. Sure, there were other players who had bad moments, bad turnovers, made bad decisions, should have skated the puck, shouldn't have passed the puck. Yeah, I saw them too. It just looked to me like Sergachev had more of those moments than anybody else did in his own zone the last three rounds of the playoffs, and the positives didn't balance it out, whether it was on the defensive end, in the neutral zone, or on the offensive side of things. So I thought there might be a chance that he would be left unprotected. He is protected. We'll talk about what went into that here in a moment. I never bought the McDonough talk. I just didn't buy it. Too good, too valuable, too much a part of this. As a number two defenseman, you're hard-pressed to find too many other teams in the National Hockey League who can prop up their number two defenseman, and he has the credentials of McDonough. So that's why I looked elsewhere. So let's get to what the Lightning did, because they chose the 8 skater option rather than the 7-3-1 option. The 7-3-1 option being 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, 1 goaltender. They went with 8 so they could protect their top 4 Ds. Hedman, no move. Should be no brainer. McDonough, as I speculated, they did protect Sergachev. Yes, he's only 23 years old. But I honestly wonder about Sergachev, who has 2 more years on his current deal before he becomes a restricted free agent there. So the Lightning clearly have control. I think this next year will be important for him. It wouldn't stun me, and I know the Lightning don't flip players the way the Rays do because they don't have to, but it wouldn't stun me if the bad moments aren't lessened in the next year if the Lightning sell high on him. If they are then convinced as he approaches 24 and then 25, he's not going to be the player that we think he could have been once he gets into his mid to late 20s. And, you know, Hedman's 30, McDonough's 32. So this is potentially a long road, but I do think Sergachev's on a shorter leash in the coming year and in a position where the Lightning could still sell high on him if they felt, you know what, this is who he is. And we're going to make the move now because the Lightning, again, next year will likely have salary cap issues, and there's no expansion draft to help alleviate that. So just keep that in mind with Sergachev going forward. I also was convinced Chernak wasn't going anywhere. Below the surface of the big stars and then the next level below that, Chernak is just clearly a very important player on the Tampa Bay Lightning. Salary for next year is just under $3 million. He's only 24 years old. They also have control of him for a while. He would hit restricted free agency in 2023. I think they feel better about Chernak, and they feel, I think it's a safer move with him back there than it is with Sergachev. Does Chernak have the pull out the NFL draft term? The ceiling that Sergachev has? No. But also the floor seems much more stable. And then if we're going to go the remaining defenseman from the most recent cup run, Jan Ruda is only under contract for one more year and only at $1.3 million. The Lightning love what they have in the guy, clearly knew what they were getting when they made that deal with, I believe it was Chicago, and I think feel very comfortable with having him on the back end. He doesn't strike me at the age of 30 hitting free agency next year as someone that Seattle says, yeah, we'll take him to start building our organization, because he's maybe a top four defenseman. He's fringe, and you might lose him after 1 year. So what's the point? Why would you take him off this roster? And then, of course, Savard is an unrestricted free agent. If he's looking to break the bank, he will do so elsewhere. If he wants to try and come back, and you know, some of these guys want to do the same things that some Buccaneers players did. It's not identical, but you know, if a player wants to come back and says to Breezeball, hey, you know, I want to stay here. How do I do it? Then perhaps the Lightning would be interested in doing so. But the likelihood is Savard is going to be somewhere else, and the expansion draft has nothing to do with it. So by going with the eight skaters and protecting four defensemen, the Lightning went totally against the grain of the against the league. Of the 30 teams that were protecting players, the Vegas Golden Knights do not. Only three of 30 went with eight skaters. Basically, two less skaters than if you go 7-3. And I admire this because I think we know the Lightning know what they're doing. So you have to give some credit to the two other organizations who did it the way the Lightning did. Now, it doesn't mean that these other organizations have the defensemen the Lightning have, but they are clearly valuing their own zone. Because this just in, you know, if nobody scores on you in a hockey game, you can't lose. Even if you don't score, you still haven't lost. You just keep playing. The only other two organizations, I thought it was interesting Yzerman and Verbeek didn't do it in Detroit, but it probably shows they're not there yet. It's coming. You know, about the time the Lightning may drop off, suddenly the Wings will start bubbling up. But Yzerman didn't do it. Nashville did it. Nashville protected five defensemen, and Toronto did it. So, wow, a Canadian team actually thinking outside the box. Credit the Toronto Maple Leafs for that thought. Toronto, Tampa Bay, Nashville, three of 30 that gave up protecting two more players by putting more value in the blue line and protecting four, or in the case of Nashville, five defensive players. All right, so on to the forwards, where unless the wild card, I guess, is Cal Foot, that if someone in the room in Seattle thinks something of Cal Foot that clearly most don't, then it's going to be a forward that would interest Seattle the most. Now, this is before we get to the side deals, which I'm pretty convinced the Lightning are going to do, especially when you consider one of the key men who built the Lightning organization into what it is today. From 2010 to 2015, runs the Seattle franchise in Todd Lewicki. So it makes all the sense in the world that the lines of communication are going to be open between Seattle and Tampa Bay, just based on the fact that Lewicki runs that franchise and he helped put a lot of things in place in Tampa Bay. So I'm not saying Seattle's going to do Tampa Bay any favors, but I don't see there being a lot of resistance to good conversation between the two organizations to try to come to a deal that is mutually beneficial to both parties, which in the end is, you know, kind of what you want every trade to be. So the four forwards protected, Cooch, Stamkos, Point. The fourth one probably threw a lot of you in that it's Cirelli, but let's walk through it a little bit. Cirelli makes less than Palat, less than Gord, less than Johnson. It isn't much, but it is less. $500,000 less than Palat, $366,000 less than Gord, $200,000 less than Johnson, and we'll bring Killorn into this equation, makes $3.5 million more than Killorn. Cirelli under contract for two more years, and RFA after those 2 years. So the Lightning essentially have control of Cirelli for a long time here. He's only 24 years old, 1 year younger than Braden Point. And much as a smart organization values defensemen, which the Lightning clearly are, you value the center position. So of the four forwards the Lightning protect, three are centers, and the other is Kucherov, a former league MVP who just had more points scored than anybody in the Stanley Cup playoffs, despite not playing a game since, what, last October. All right, so there's some sense there. Now you may say, well, why Cirelli at center rather than Gord? Doesn't Gord do more of the little things? It just seems to me that when it comes to the little things, it's easier to find more players that do the little things than the players who have exceptional skill. And I think that's the difference here between Gord and Cirelli. The Lightning clearly value Cirelli. Gord's under contract for, what is it, three more years? Or is it four? Four more years. So clearly there's more money out there. But yeah, I think while both are centers, and Gord is 29, Cirelli's only 24. I mean, what you're kind of looking at here is, and you know, I'm not writing the obit for Steven Stamkos, but I think we're starting to see the end is near for Stamkos, that the Lightning are essentially saying, we see ourselves with a top two centers down the road of Point and Cirelli. So that left Palat unprotected, which I'm sure doesn't go over well with Cooch. That I do worry about a little bit, and why I thought, you know, Palat might be protected just because you don't want to set Cooch off on a tangent of losing any of his guys. Tyler Johnson, yeah, we knew this was coming. I mean, he was on waivers. It seems he's been out the door various times in recent years. You wonder if he has a ninth life or if he's exhausted them. Is this finally the time that Johnson goes? He has, 3 years left on his deal, and there's a pretty good amount of money on it. Then you drop down to a Killorn who has 2 years left but is 31 years old. I mean, Tyler's 30. Blake Coleman's not on the list because he's an unrestricted free agent. I'd love to see Coleman back. I think the Lightning would love to see Coleman back. But that's going to take the willingness of Coleman based on whatever the Lightning are able to move in the expansion draft. Maroon's got 1 year left. I mean, Maroon's not a guy that Seattle's not going to take Maroon. I know he's won three Stanley Cups in a row, but, you know, come on. You're not playing that Lightning in a bottle. It's not like Maroon is from Seattle. and just wants to spend the rest of his life there. So that just, that doesn't make sense, where if Maroon wants to come back to the Lightning, you would think they'd be able to work that out because Maroon makes under $1 million. Then you get into some of the younger guys, and Matthew Joseph, and the Lightning have so many of them. Oh, and also let's bring up Ross Colton, who is an RFA, but Ross Colton also in the mix there. I just wonder, as much as I like Colton, you know, I've always liked Marchessault. And, you know, Marchessault has gone on to do some great things since leaving the Lightning organization. He went to the Florida Panthers, and he did well. And then the Panthers didn't protect him. Vegas took him, and he's been one of Vegas's three or four best players for the entire 4 years that the Vegas Golden Knights have been in existence. I just kind of wonder, you know, below the level of superstar forwards, when it comes to a player like a Marchessault or a player like a Colton, if there's the Lightning feel we have so much of these guys that, yeah, we turn them over because there's another train coming. And we don't want to overpay to keep them. We kind of have nowhere to play them on the top two lines. And these aren't third line guys. So they kind of, we have no room for them. So unfortunately, you're blessed with riches. Some guys got to go. I don't think there's that appeal on Colton to Seattle. I could be wrong. But I'm looking at more from the Lightning standpoint. It reminds me of Marchessault a little bit, and how the Lightning did lose Marchessault. Marchessault has had a great career and has been very good, and the Lightning still won two Stanley Cups without him. It's not like the Lightning missed the guy. So that brings us to the likelihood of the side deal, which would be the Lightning in Seattle working out a deal where Seattle picks an unprotected player, but the Lightning have knowledge of who they're going to protect and throw in an additional player or two or a draft pick or two. That's going to happen. It happened a lot 5 years ago, 5-4, with the Vegas Golden Knights. It doesn't always work out, where Minnesota, a lot of, you know, Vegas got a lot of people good in that draft, and had a lot of things go their way. And I know you bring up the Marc-Andre, you would bring up the Marc-Andre Fleury thing, which we could be going down that road with Carey Price suddenly available to Seattle. All they have to do is say his name, and suddenly Carey Price is out of Montreal. But an Alex Tuch, for example, someone that Minnesota drafted, I believe was a first-round draft pick, was no lower than a second-round draft pick, had just kind of got to the majors, for lack of a better term, played a handful of games, and then Minnesota had to submit their list, and they said to Vegas, if you take Tuch, so we can pull some other guys back, we'll also, you know, throw in some other things. And Tuch became one of those five best players that Vegas has had the last 4 years, and is now locked up on, I think he's 2 or 3 years into a 6-year deal worth, I don't know, $36, $38 million. He's an exceptionally good forward. So teams can make a mistake by saying, yeah, take him, and then we'll give you even more to take him, and it looks really, really bad after the fact. I'm thinking Tyler Johnson clearly is front and center here. And the Lightning would be willing to throw in another one of these forwards and perhaps future considerations, which would alleviate some of their cap issues and have them have some control over who is leaving this roster rather than it being a surprise. So there are just some of my thoughts on it. I'm sure you have plenty of thoughts, and we'll see what happens come Wednesday. The Todd Wright Toddcast is presented by Brandon Legal Group, your full-service law firm servicing the greater Tampa Bay area, and an assist from our friends at Hat Tricks, the hockey bar downtown with terrific food, and I thank them for their recent and continued support of Todd Wright Tour Golf Tournaments. Again, my email is wright.todd@yahoo.com. Thanks for listening.